From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
A historic changing of the guard. State Representative Chris Welch is now the first black man elected Speaker of the House. He ends Michael Madigan's 35-year hold on power.
When Speaker Madigan was sworn into the General Assembly in January of 1971, I wasn't even born yet.
People are dying from this virus that don't need to die.
If we are forced to move to a crisis standard of care in our hospitals, it will be because massive numbers of unvaccinated people chose to let others go without quality care. And even more people will die.
And while Illinois state government saw big changes in 2021, it's still unclear when the pandemic will come to an end. We'll talk about some of what happened in the past year here on our year-end review on State Week. Joining us today, we have Charlie Wheeler. He's an emeritus professor and former director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Charlie's also been a longtime State House reporter and observer. With us, we have Hannah Meisel, NPR Illinois State House editor, and joining us today, Amanda Vinicky of WTTW's Chicago Tonight. And Amanda, we just had to talk with you again before the end of the year.
I am so glad to finish off 2021 with something nice and wonderful.
Well, Amanda, let me go to you first. Michael Madigan. I wasn't sure I would ever live to see this. He's out of power. He left office. He tried to hang on to being the Illinois House Speaker. That didn't work out. And, of course, this stems from something we talked about on last year's Year in Review show when we discussed the whole scandal involving Commonwealth Edison. But still, this was a monumental moment in Illinois state government.
It really is remarkable that he's gone. You walk down a corridor right along the House chambers that lists all of the reigns of House speakers of yesteryear, and Madigan just has lines and lines and lines on these plaques, and it almost seems as if, you know, it would be a joke in a sitcom that somebody would have a term for that long, but he did. And what's, I think, almost equally remarkable is though we continue to talk about him, his name comes up from time to time. How have things changed? What is different with Madigan no longer around? How quickly somebody that held such power not only lost it in terms of losing the actual speakership and moving on from serving as chair of the Democratic Party of Illinois, but also that he's really sort of just lost a grip in general. There are a lot of lobbyists who are still connected with him, legislators that he helped to win a place in the General Assembly, and yet he's gone. He's no longer a part of the discussion in any way, shape, or form. Huge story for the start of 2021, and then the rest of the year, really sort of an asterisk.
Hannah, he was replaced by Chris Welch, who became the first black House Speaker in the state of Illinois. And how has that gone?
It has been so interesting watching Chris Welch fill this role. Obviously, you know, he's a very big shoes to fill, 36 years worth where Mike Madigan was the House Speaker. But of course, he doesn't want to fill those shoes as Madigan did. You know, from the very beginning, he took steps to differentiate himself from Mike Madigan because, of course, every single person, especially Republicans, are looking for evidence that there is, you know, still a connection between the Speaker's office in the 13th Ward and, you know, the power center that had existed for decades and decades. You know, watching Chris Welch, who probably described himself as a pretty progressive guy, obviously the first Black House Speaker, very meaningful. Watching Chris Welch become the House Speaker, become the guy, I mean, he would probably be, you know, if we had an off-the-record conversation, he'd probably be open about the fact that it's been hard for him. He is kind of the opposite, the antithesis of Mike Madigan in a lot of ways. He is much more open and just a warmer kind of person. And so it's kind of hard to turn that off when you are the guy, people are coming to you and you have to kind of set boundaries. I think that's been a little bit hard for him. Obviously, he has let a lot more progressive legislation get through to the House floor. A lot of it passed, some of it did not. But obviously that is a different approach, than Mike Madigan in that, I mean, we would see, things that would take years to come to pass. I mean, when Majority Leader Greg Harris announced a few weeks ago that he was going to not run again for another term, obviously, a lot of people, Amanda, me, you know, every other reporter in the state, looked back at what Greg Harris accomplished in 2013, passing same-sex marriage in Illinois. And that was an effort. It was not easy. Obviously, it was a different time, but it was also something that Mike Madigan didn't snap his fingers and it just, you know, magically came to the floor. It was a very long effort and he was very careful and deliberate. And I think Chris Welch, especially, you know, in kind of a partnership with Governor Pritzker, another progressive guy, they are letting a lot more go. And it's going to be very interesting to watch that evolve in the, you know, coming years.
Yeah, Charlie, you've covered Madigan during his entire time as speaker, certainly, and even longer than that. So I want to give you the last word on him. But you look back, I mean, he's been gone now almost an entire year. At this point, during our year-end review in 2020, I think we were not sure if Madigan was going to hang on to power or not. Of course, he did not. Your thoughts on him, kind of his legacy of what he leaves behind in state government.
As Hannah suggested, he personally is not a very progressive guy, I don't believe, in terms of what he's for. He's more of a conservative person himself in terms of his own feelings about policy, but he had a knack over the years of adjusting and not letting his own personal beliefs get in the way of what he thought was best for his caucus. And for example, the gay marriage legislation that ultimately passed, had he chosen to, he could have tubed that forever. But when the time was right, he let it happen. And I also thought the way he stepped down, and I guess was part of it, I saw a leadership battle back in, when was it? It would have been, I guess, 1973, that went 93 ballots in the House because there were two rival camps that would not come together. And maybe that was in Madigan's mind, because that was only his second or third year in the legislature, his second term, I believe. And maybe that was in his mind when he looked, counted noses, realized he did not have enough support to be reelected speaker. There were a number of his progressive caucus who said flat out, I'm not going to vote for you for speaker. And if I'm not mistaken, Representative Stephanie Kifowit from Ottawa actually put herself forward as a candidate. And so instead of maybe trying to force them and twist their arms and somehow or other cobble together the votes that would be needed for him to stay as speaker, he saw the handwriting on the wall. And rather than do that, he went up to Chris Welch and asked him, do you want to be speaker? Check and make sure it's okay with your wife. And if it is, put together the coalition to do it, which Chris did. In terms of style, Chris is a lot more open than Mike Madigan. If anybody follows Twitter, Chris Welch is on Twitter almost every day. And he goes all around. You see him at this event, that event. And I'd be willing to bet that Mike Madigan still doesn't have a Twitter account. And you very rarely, if ever, saw him out in public. And the House Democrats under his time had little or no social media presence. And now they have quite a bit. So I would say that in terms of the results, Madigan was slower, more calculated, but he was also able to put aside his own personal feelings and do what he thought was going to be best for his membership. His overall goal all the time he was speaker was to elect House Democrats. And that, in my mind, was kind of, he saw that as a way to achieve his purpose of protecting the city of Chicago and its institutions.
Well, and Charlie, I do think that this is a recap on 2021, but as we look forward to 2022, really a huge part of Madigan's legacy is the strength, the dominance of the Democratic Party. Arguably, it would not be as dominant as it is today with supermajorities, all statewide offices, control of the Illinois Supreme Court, were it not for Madigan and his machinations.
Well, I think that is very true. He was aided by some of the demographic factors. He's over the years, he was aided by the fact that the suburbs, once upon a time solidly Republican, have become more at play, and some of them have become solidly Democratic. Part of it is demographics in the sense of different ethnicities moving into the suburbs. And in my mind, a large part of it is that the Republican Party in Illinois has moved away from the Republican Party that I knew when I covered the legislature, the party of Jim Thompson and Jim Edgar. And now, to a large extent, they're all mistletoe kissers for Donald Trump.
Well, one of the things that led to a difficult year for Democrats, and especially for Speaker Welch, but also for the governor and the Senate president, was this is a redistricting cycle. So political boundaries being redrawn, that's always going to get a lot of interest and a lot of contention behind closed doors in many cases, and sometimes not, at the State House. And Amanda, that definitely was a lot thrown on to the new House Speaker and the others because Madigan has really controlled that for so long.
Yes, but they got it done, or did they? As we tape this, Sean, still waiting on a court ruling, because despite, as was earlier noted, the historic nature of Welch's speakership as the first Black individual to hold that position in Illinois, there's pushback, including from a powerful NAACP chapter, and despite both redistricting committees having a part of leadership, Latino legislators, there's likewise pushback from a major group that advocates for Latino policy, MALDEF. And so, we are waiting on a court ruling to see whether the maps that were passed by the General Assembly and signed into law controversially by Governor Pritzker, given that he backed out on a pledge to veto any measure that was any maps that were drawn or really had as architects, legislators. Well, we're waiting to see whether they will actually become law because of these key groups that say, nope, they don't actually fit with voting rights laws that are meant to protect people of color and other minority groups. So they got it done, pushed it through, had to change the election date in order to get it done on the congressional level. So another change that will affect Illinois at least 2022 and then these maps long into the future.
Hannah, I want to move on to some policy decisions that were made, and one of those involved, and I would say this, politics and government is a little too nuanced to say there's a winner, there's a loser, but certainly if there was a winner in state government, I think this past year, it probably was the Illinois Black Caucus, because they were able to push through some legislation, get it approved, get it signed into law, that they had been working on for quite a while, including a lot of criminal justice legislation. Tell us about some of that.
Yeah, it almost, when I was preparing for the show, I almost forgot, because it was in the last General Assembly. It was during that lame duck period in early January last year, at the same time that behind the scenes, everyone is, quietly panicking about what is going to happen with, the speaker's race and all of that. The Black Caucus was getting a lot done. They passed three of their four, what they called pillars. They're kind of just jam-packed pieces of, omnibus legislation. The fourth one they ended up passing, I think, in March. Big, huge, transformational, they hope, pieces of legislation that address health disparities, economic access disparities, education, and, of course, criminal justice, which turned out to be probably the biggest one in terms of news coverage. There was a lot of fear and anger, kind of whipped up into a frenzy around that. Most of the criminal justice legislation hasn't even gone into effect yet. And also, in the year that has basically passed since then, there's been updates to it. But this is something that the Black Caucus has been thinking about a lot, not just in the time since the quote unquote racial reckoning of the summer 2020. Obviously, they live this every day as Black Americans, not just as, you know, Black lawmakers, but just in their daily lives. But, you know, I think there's been a lot of misinformation. For example, I mean, like, bail reform has not even come to fruition yet. And things like licensing police officers didn't actually happen in the piece of legislation that ended up passing. You know, it was talked about, but it didn't end up going. Like, there was a lot in there. But yeah, definitely a huge victory for the Black caucus. You know, I think it ties back to kind of the mutual power that Mike Madigan and the Black caucus had, you know, teamed up, you know, over the decades and, you know, built up that power within the General Assembly. And so really interesting to watch that happen. And of course, really interesting to see the backlash there too. It's just been a really interesting year watching that play out because of course that happened within the first, I mean, week or two, and then, well, quarter, if you want to count the third pillar passing, but you know, we've had 9 months since of consternation over it. And we've also in the last few months seen the Illinois Republican Party and, you know, kind of party writ large, because we have seen this wave of crime during the pandemic, there's been a backlash. And, you know, we've seen the Illinois Republican Party kind of coalescing around these more kind of tough on crime ideas. And we'll see more of that, I'm sure, as we head into an election year in 2022.
Yeah, Charlie, Illinois, it seems, moves things incrementally. This was a lot of movement at one time. You know, there's likely to be backlash when something monumental takes place over a very short period.
Yeah, and some of it is backlash about what may happen in the future, because as Hannah said, the changes in bail, those don't take effect now. Probably the most significant thing that's going to take effect January 1st in a couple of days is the requirement that police departments and sheriff's offices in population centers of more than 500,000 will have to wear and activate body cams from now on. A lot of them do anyway, but a lot of them don't. And sometimes there's been issues in Chicago where police officers will sort of kind of forget to turn on their body cam until after the fact. And so that, I think, is going to be a big change. The target date for all law enforcement officers to have these body cams and operating, I believe, is in 2025. Another thing that I thought was interesting that got passed in criminal justice, and this was not that controversial, the governor signed over the summer legislation that would make Illinois the first state to ban law enforcement officers from lying to juveniles during interrogations. And that, unfortunately, had become relatively common. And at some point, Illinois was referred to as the false confession capital. We also put a lot of money into what's called restorative justice practices, where we're focusing on what some people would argue is the root cause of crime: poverty, poor education, poor health, and putting, for want of a better term, mediators out of the neighborhood. Guys who used to be in the gangs and now will go out and try and mediate and settle dispute between gangs. It's not as headline grabbing, or it's not as sexy as saying, well, we're going to lock these guards up and throw the key away. We still have to deal with the question of how do we stop the inflow of guns into the state? We've started to take action against the straw purchasers, somebody who would go and buy a gun in Indiana, bring it back to Chicago, sell it on the street. But that's still a problem that's got to be addressed. But I think, as we said earlier, I think progress is being made, and it's incremental, slowly but surely.
Amanda, there was also some big legislation when it came to energy, the state trying to move to a greener path, a greener future. Fill us in on what took place there.
Sean, this is really a very big deal, in part because this took years to reach this point. Illinois has had clean energy goals in the past and not met them. This is supposed to be the law, the package that allows Illinois to end a reliance on coal as well as natural gas, although I think that's in dispute with some recent reporting in terms of really is Illinois going to be at the point where we are going to be really contributing to helping out with curbing climate change or a contributor here, but this is a major deal in terms of changing the energy landscape going forward. Coal plants that were already going to be shut down will have an incentive to do so earlier. Nuclear plants, meanwhile, getting support from you, from me, from consumers all over the state to continue to stay open. This was an alliance that was eventually reached with all powerful ComEd and Exelon, who did not have quite the same power, if you will, as they once did under the Capitol Dome, but nonetheless were able to work something out in Illinois that frankly benefits their bottom line, and they say is very important for the communities where there are nuclear plants that otherwise Exelon had said would need to be shut down without really the subsidy coming from consumers. Again, most environmentalists backing it because they say nuclear is a bridge to moving toward renewable energy sources, solar, wind. This is a package that likewise in part looks to consumers to pay for supports for those industries and really sort of changing the energy future for everyone, and as well as the landscape of not just a landscape that will likely see more solar farms and wind farms as you're driving along the highway, but also the landscape of jobs, including supports for people of color who historically have been kept out of unions and some of these jobs, and retraining for people who are losing longtime work in places like power plants that are powered by coal. And so it really is a very big piece of legislation that Illinois trying to say this is a leading model nationally.
Well, all of this happening with the backdrop, or maybe in the forefront, the pandemic of the state of Illinois dealing with and the entire world dealing with COVID-19. And as we said here at the end of 2021, things are not looking that good at this point. Hannah, where are we, at least the latest we know, when it comes to the state of Illinois and COVID-19?
Yeah, I mean, we've really run the gamut in 2021 as we began. And, you know, I remember Amanda and me in the that big Bank of Springfield Center where the House was having lame duck session. You know, COVID was still raging. And then a few weeks later, you know, restaurants reopening, and then vaccines, you know, after a rough initial rollout, you know, vaccines became widely available. And by July, I mean, people were going around without masks. The statewide mask mandate had dropped, and, you know, I felt comfortable going. Like, I don't know. It's just been a wild ride. And of course, you know, we've now seen the Delta bump, and then we're currently experiencing this surge in cases from the Omicron variant, and hospitals are again filling up. And I mean, not just filling up. I don't really have a vocabulary for how fast, you know, things are accelerating now, but it has been a very tough year. Obviously, government is kind of like an ocean liner. It's really hard to turn around things on a dime. And I think that kind of exacerbates, you know, issues when you have a fast moving pandemic and you know, it's hard to adjust policies. But, you know, I guess we'll see what happens in 2022. Obviously, we all pray that Omicron might be the last of it, but we don't know what lies beyond. And, you know, we'll see also how it plays into election year politics, given that Governor J.B. Pritzker is up for a second term.
Well, just about a minute left here, but I think it's important to mention, and Charlie, I'm going to let you talk on this. The state of Illinois, we've talked about its problems financially for really years and years. Suddenly things look a lot better. You know, fill us in on why that is the case and just how good is the picture for the state of Illinois.
Yeah, at this time last year, we were worried about how the state's revenues were going to tank, and the picture looked pretty bleak. But over the last 12 months, things have turned up. Part of it was there was a lot of help from the federal government in terms of the relief funds, both to the state and to individual citizens, which allowed people to continue to help people keep their jobs, the money to the businesses to hire. The grants helped people do their own spending, which helped our sales tax returns. So the budget that the governor signed for the fiscal year that began on July 1st was balanced in terms of what the Constitution requires. And he forecast at the time a surplus next June 30th. And as a matter of fact, the five-year picture that came out in November by the Governor's Office of Management and Budget predicted that the fiscal year we're in now will end with the $1.7 billion revenue increase, which is a year ago, we would have thought, no, that can't happen. And as a result, the state's bond ratings have been improved by the rating agencies, and our credit outlook has gone from stable or negative to positive. And the ratings increase, if I'm not mistaken, was the first time in more than 20 years where the rating agencies actually were more favorable to the state. And then you look at our bill backlog, which not that long ago was close to $17 billion. And now it's down in the $4 billion range in terms of bills that are awaiting to be paid, vouchers at the comptroller's office. And the comptroller has said, Susana Mendoza has said that the state is pretty much paying things on time for the first time in a long time. So yeah, things are looking up, but you don't know what's going to happen with the pandemic. You don't know what's going to happen with the fact that people who don't get vaccinated are just prolonging the agony. But at the moment, it looks a lot more positive on the state's fiscal front than it did a year ago.
And for the last time in 2021, we'll go to our notes from the field. And Charlie, let's go to you first.
Well, I don't know if Illinois has the national record for the number of state symbols, but it's got a lot of them. The cardinal, the violet, the white oak, monarch butterfly, even the state snack food, popcorn. Next week, we'll have another one. We'll have an official state microbe. Penicillium rubens, the mold that yields the antibiotic penicillin, and that's because work done in Peoria in the 40s resulted in the discovery of a strain of a fungus on a cantaloupe that allowed for speedier production of the antibiotic.
Okay, and Hannah?
You know, Sean, there is a lot of obviously options we could choose from. It was a very long year, but I wanted to mention here at the end, it never ceases to amaze me, just the people who come to Springfield and they bring all of their talents and their life experiences and, you know, how it's still the best place to be. And it was really hard in 2021 to, you know, have the Capitol not be so open, obviously because of COVID restrictions. We didn't have the usual big lobby days. I really appreciate all of the people, lobbyists, staff, obviously journalists, who, you know, care about this stuff. And another year of proving that state government matters more to people's lives for the most part than all of the sexy things that get headlines and TV time on national news.
And that's all the time we have for this episode of State Week in the end of 2021. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler, Hannah Meisel, and Chicago Tonight's Amanda Vinicky. Get a podcast of our show at nprillinois.org through the NPR One app or iTunes, and just look for State Week. I'm Sean Crawford. Join us next time.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.